45 years ago this coming Sunday, on July 20th, 1969, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin became the first two people to land on the lunar surface. Now, while their third crew member, Michael Collins, continued to orbit around the moon, Armstrong and Aldrin arrived in the lunar module, Eagle, one of three parts of the Apollo 11 spacecraft, which also included the command module, Columbia, and a command service module to support Columbia. Approximately 6.5 hours after a very rocky landing, Armstrong and Aldrin exited the LEM and set foot on the moon to begin their extravehicular activities.
Contact light. Okay, engine stop. Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
That's an amazing feat. And after several other moon landing episodes, we simply stopped going. Congratulations to everybody who participated in the space program, those who gave their lives for the space program, and let's continue with it. Let's not let their deaths go in vain. Let's not let the work of hundreds of thousands of men and women go in vain. We need to develop another manned space mission, and we need to do it now, especially with what's been going on around this planet these days. My gosh, I don't think in my life, and I was born during the Korean War. I don't remember it, obviously. And then I was witnessing, of course, what this country went through with Vietnam. And then all the little skirmishes along the line, of course. 1991 Desert Storm. That situation. And then we went back into Iraq in 2003. Afghanistan in 2001. And it just doesn't seem to stop. And look at this planet today. We need a mission, and we need a space program back, vibrant and ready to go. I shall be back in a moment as we have 2 hours of open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, and I'm sure you've been following the events of all this week as well. It's just absolutely unbelievable. You think, just when one episode has somewhat reached its peak, something else happens. It just doesn't stop. Well, we've got open lines for you. I'm glad you're here. And let's go to the calls to get things started. We shall go to Ernest in the state of Washington, west of the Rockies. Ernest, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
It's a pleasure, George. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise.
I'd just like to say, okay, I'm going to go back to the first missing Malaysian plane. I'm under the belief, this is just one person's opinion, I think it's on land somewhere, but I'd just like to say that on the second Malaysian plane here recently, that, okay, they asked why the U.S. had found it, how they knew it was down so quickly, and they said because of satellite imagery.
Yeah.
And you know exactly what I'm going to
know where you're
going. So now we go back, and we go back to the first plane. So now why can't we use that for that plane? But you said, and I'm going to take this off the air, but I just want to say, you asked the question why when people, like when they're dreaming and demons are attacking them, or when maybe UFOs are abducting them, people yell the name Jesus. And that's because even for non-believers, that just by his name is above all names, and that exudes power. And so it's a power that the demons don't like to hear. And that's what's actually going on. We're fighting right now a war of good and evil. But, George, I love you, man. You're the best. George Norrie for president.
Well, you never know. That may happen. If we do, we're going to make some full-scale changes, that's for sure. You know, two strange things about this, and you deal with two things. One is you deal with logic and what you expect. And, you know, logic tells you, okay, this missing a Malaysian plane, flight 370, the Boeing 777, which is the same one, by the way, that was shot down yesterday. Logic tells you, okay, it crashed. It, you know, something horrendous happened on that plane and it crashed into the ocean. But then you start thinking, it was flying for 6 or 7 hours afterward. Then it ran out of fuel, or maybe it landed on land. Then you start thinking of all these other possibilities. And I'm still not ruling out that that plane is on land somewhere. Now, this is where it gets even stranger. And again, logic tells you that plane yesterday was a Malaysian plane, a different flight, got shot down by a missile. I got an email last night, and then subsequently he sent me a follow-up email, and he said, my gosh, I couldn't believe you read that. And he thinks that yesterday's plane was the missing Malaysian plane from March 8th. And I stopped to think about that. I read the email on the air last night. Nah. But it's strange. And let me tell you what made it even stranger. Today, there was a story that I read during our first hour of a pro-rebel, pro-Russian rebel, one of the insurgent leaders. And he said that the people, his people who witnessed the saw the bodies from this plane crash, they said they reeked of decomposition, which means that they died much, much earlier than yesterday. And he said it appeared that the bodies had been dead for a long time. Days, he said. Now that is strange. So then my little conspiratorial mind is saying, okay, is that that missing plane? And did they kill all those people and they put them all back on the plane? And whatever, what was the purpose then? What did they need the plane for? What did they take it for? Maybe they took some people who were on the plane. I heard rumors that there's some people dealing with some incredible technology. Who knows? And again, logic tells you that plane was a different flight, got shot down. No question about that, right? But then you start thinking of all these other scenarios. It's really weird. Let's go to John in Lima, Ohio, east of the Rockies. John, it's always a pleasure. Welcome.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Never a straight story, which is why I respectfully disagree with the idea that we need a manned space mission.
Okay, tell me why.
I've got a little story to tell you. My grandfather worked for the city of Lima, and him and the guys ate lunch at what they call the bench, the welding bench. And one of the people that my grandfather had lunch with quite a bit was a man named Steve Armstrong, Neil Armstrong's father.
Okay.
And Steve told my grandfather that Neil saw things on the moon that he was told not to talk about.
That is a possibility.
Yes. So if we take the two theories about the moon and put them side by side, the one theory that says we never went, that it was all staged, versus the other side of the aisle, which says we went, but they were told not to say what they saw. When I stop to consider, you know, you mentioned about lives that were sacrificed for the space mission. You know, first and foremost, the lives. Secondly, the money. I personally would rather have the hoax.
Why?
Because of the lives and the fact that we are broke times 20.
Well, we are broke times 20. Would you agree with a manned space program if it was a unified worldwide effort and everybody put some cash into the kitty?
Yes, that would be a more acceptable.
Yeah, I don't have
approach.
A problem with that.
Yeah, plus you've got a number of selective education, information, resources going into the program.
Yeah, I think is the way we should do it. We should do it like a worldwide federation. Everybody's got high technology now anyway, so it's not like, you know, we have to hide something from somebody. India's, you know, launching, North Korea's launching, China's launching, Japan's launching. Everybody's got the technology now, so there's nothing to hide.
By the way, I was wondering if you could clear up something about Bigfoot for me.
If I can.
When you stop to consider, you know, there again, the two sides, people that say dimensional or physical, when you stop to consider that with the footprints and people reporting odors and smells.
That's right.
The DNA is actually in the footprint. Touch DNA.
Nobody's tested that yet.
Yeah.
It's a good question. I'll ask some of the Bigfoot folks that. As you know, Brian Sykes was looking at the DNA. He's a geneticist, and his conclusion, strange stuff, but we don't think it's Bigfoot. All kinds of animals, maybe an unknown bear from the Himalayas. That's what they called Yeti, but no strange Bigfoot yet. But he says that doesn't mean there's not a Bigfoot. We just don't have the right samples. Let's go next to Tim in South Lake Tahoe. And I believe that's on the California side. Tim, go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, sure thing.
Yeah. Hey, great show. I'm calling. We got a lot of activity right here in South Lake Tahoe, and we're talking like lights and stuff. And it's been going on probably at least 6 months. And like really crazy stuff. And I've been talking a lot to different people. I mean, I'll just talk to somebody on the street, you know, and I get more and more stories. And I talked to a friend yesterday, and he's like, oh man, there was this like object, looked like a crane flying through the sky real slow.
Huh.
And it's really like, you know, I mean, I haven't actually witnessed anything. But I've had, like, there was a group of three people that had, like, a green orb that went by them, scared the jeebus out of the one guy, really. And we've got a lot of activity right here in South Lake Tahoe. And now, according to my one friend who's right there in the neighborhood, we have military now. And we got our share of choppers flying over. And now he's telling me he's seeing military walking up the street just a couple of days ago, full gear, right into this area that is like a total hotspot.
Like they're looking for something.
And you know, George, if I did the email and text and all that stuff, I don't know how to do all that stuff. And speaking of which, I actually had a friend and I was telling him, I go, look, I want to go to the Peter Davenport site and make a report, you know,
yeah.
I want to bring this out, right? Because I'm not a computer guy, which is probably a good thing. And so I'm telling him about it. He gets the heebie-jeebies. He's like, oh, my goodness, I watched five of them this year. So we got something going on right here in South Lake Tahoe.
I will check with Peter when he's on next week or the week after with us.
You know, and it's you know, if I did the computer stuff, George, I would be talking to guys. I'm still stuck in the Stone Age. You know?
Well, you got to. Tim, you got to try the computer. I was a slow dinosaur years and years ago, and I first started it when I was in my St. Louis Nighthawk days. And I've got to tell you, it is an incredible tool. It could be used for waste, no doubt about that, but it's a great tool. We take your text questions as well. We're on cutting-edge technology here at Coast to Coast. And as soon as we, by the way, get back into our new studio they're building for us, we'll have Skype up and running again. So even though you hear the Skype phone number, George 97313, with the phone numbers, Skype here is not hooked up yet in this temporary studio we're in. But it will be when we go back. Probably in less than a month. Tom, what do you got for a text?
Well, first of all, would you even be able to do the show without your computer?
Yeah, I could do it, but it would not be easy. It would be very, very tough.
Tough. This one we have from Carl in West Covina, California. He says, hey, George, I was listening to you interview James last night, and I wanted to ask.
James Sanders.
Is it possible that the plane that disappeared a while back could be a cover-up by our own government for some strange reason?
It's possible that it could be for anything. Again, you take the logical. approach.
Yeah.
Something happened to the plane. It was hijacked, or the pilots took it. It's either on land or they ran out of fuel. It was not a suicide mission, because if it were, it wouldn't have flown around for 6 hours or so. They would have taken it down right away.
I don't think it's a cover-up from our government, though.
No, but I mean, I do believe the plane was hijacked from either the pilots or somebody in the plane.
We might never know.
We may never know. Thanks, Weird. Tom. Next up, we go to Troy in Steelville, Missouri. First-time caller. Troy, you're on the air with me. Go ahead.
Hey, George. I appreciate what you're doing. I like your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to mention, I used to live back in Florida, and back in 2009, in June of 2009, I was walking down a dirt road where I used to live out there, and it was getting about dark, and I thought I'd take and sit down, and I like to look at the stars at night, and I was sitting there watching it get dark, and I noticed this light moving across the eastern horizon, just moving slow and no blinking light or anything to it. And as I paid more attention to it, like I say, it was getting dark and it got darker. A light came out of this thing, and it wasn't just like turning a flashlight on where you, or flip a light switch where light just comes on. It was kind of, the light came out like water flowing down a stream, down a hill,
yeah,
kind of, with a bunch of sparkling lights inside of that that were different colors. And when it got to me, when the light got to me, it didn't, like I say, it didn't happen instantly. It took a few seconds.
It was like it was trickling down.
Right. When the light got to me, the darkness turned to day, and then the light was pulled back into this object that looked, it got to looking like a golden football, basically.
That small?
Well, I figure it was probably a mile or two away from me.
Okay.
I'm not real.
So difficult to determine its size.
Right. But I could tell, it was obviously big enough where I'm sure it had, some kind of intelligent life in it. But when the light was pulled back into this thing, it just shot off into the sky. I mean, just like a meteorite or something. And it went up south, and it went down to the south, but up into space, it was weird.
Stranger things happening all over the place. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you what else is happening on this planet. People are, remember that Twisted Sisters song, "We're Not Gonna Take It"? People feel that way. They're not gonna take it anymore. I mean, I just think people are at their boiling point. They're fed up. You know, as good old Howard Beale from the Movie Network would say, that little clip I use so often, you know what? Just give us our toaster and our radial tires and our telly and leave me alone. That's all people want. They just want to be left alone. But we're not going to leave you alone. We're coming back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with more of your calls. Don't touch your dial. Well, it's time for our shout out to those of you who are listening to Coast to Coast on our more than 570 radio stations across North America. Thank you for listening, Coast Insiders. And, of course, thank you for all you do. XM Sirius Talk Channel 102 now. We made the switch from 104. You're now listening to us on Channel 102. And then how about the various chat rooms that are out there? Into Infinity, I salute you all. Fantastic Forum 2, Imaginative World, Sorcery, IRC, those who follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Yahoo Chat, the Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group, the SoCal UFO Meetup Group, the Hollywood Ghost Hunters, and our buddy Greg the Cook in St. Louis, who I understand has great weather this week. Greg, hope all is well. Thanks for listening to Coast to Coast AM. And even though a couple of you get on with your text messages during the open lines, during the week, we use your text questions for the guests, too. So don't think they fall on deaf ears. We will use some of those questions throughout the course of the interview for you. Let's go now to Anna in Mississippi. Hello there, Anna. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Are you there?
Irma?
I've got Anna up on my screen. Have we changed your name?
Oh, well, I guess he did, but it's still Irma.
Irma, it is.
Okay, I called in like a couple nights ago. I have two quick things for you. You told me to go into my closet, and there's probably another dimension back there. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
I was never brave enough.
You didn't go. I knew you wouldn't go.
I'm scared. Okay, I have this little short story that same night, right? So I listen to you 7 days a week, pretty much, you know. I remember many days you're on, and then I listen to George Knapp, so on and
great.
So forth.
Thank you.
So, it's my pleasure, actually. And I was listening a while back, and there was a man talking about, you know, if you just tell them you believe in them and you want to see them, you know, they'll appear to you. They'll show themselves to you. So I'm driving around, and, you know, I throw newspapers to people. And I got bored, and I was about to fall asleep, so I rolled up a newspaper, and I was using it as, like, a magnifier or an amplifier.
Yeah.
And I was holding it out the window like, I believe in you, and I just want to see you, you know. And I'm looking out the window, and I'm looking around in the moon. It was, like, up above my visor where I couldn't see it or anything, and nothing really happened. So I just continued on, and I was like, I wonder if this thing is, like, hovering above my van. So I stick my head out the window, and I look up, and my heart stopped beating. I saw this really bright light, and I was like, all in a split second, I thought to myself, holy crap, I've made them mad, and they're here to get me, right?
You were under a street light, weren't you?
It was the moon.
And that's when it was at its super moon size.
It scared me, took my breath away, so I just want to kind of put a little hint out there.
Hey,
be careful what you wish for.
Let me ask you, by the way, how long you been delivering newspapers, Irma?
3 years.
Well, 3 years, you may not have noticed the change, but they have gotten thinner, haven't they?
Yes, they have.
Yep. Do you know why?
Why is that?
The internet.
Yeah, you know, I deliver the Sun Herald, and if you go on the computer and you try to find a story online, it's much harder than the newspaper, because the newspaper is laid out, it's right there, you know where it's at, because it's what you're used to. And you go on the internet, it's just so confusing.
Nothing replaces a great reporter for a newspaper. Nothing.
Yeah, well, a lot of stuff on the internet these days is lies.
But I got
anybody can do that.
I got to tell you, Irma, years ago, those papers were thick. They had advertising, they had a lot of editorial, and, you know, you would roll them up. You could hit somebody on the head with those things and hurt them. Now, they're pretty thin.
You know, I always wondered how they did it back in the old days on bicycles, because, you know, I deliver like 200 newspapers, so I just don't know how the guys on the bicycles used to do it.
There's a movie that Christian Bale was in when he was much younger called Newsboys, and it was a play on Broadway, but they turned it into a movie. You've got to watch that. It was the early days of Pulitzer, and I worked for that family in St. Louis. Great newspaper, the Post-Dispatch, and you know, that is a shell of itself. Things are changing.
All right,
but the bicycle newspaper boys used to have big bags, and they'd have their newspapers rolled up, and they'd probably have about 25 in each bag, and then, you know, once they emptied it, they went back and got more.
Holy crap, I'd be lopsided and fall off the bike.
You don't want to do that. Okay, be safe out there.
Thank you.
And then they throw them from the curb. Hey, there you go. All that stuff. I mean, those were the days. Those were the days. How about doctors that used to come to your house? Actually come to your house. Do you know why they don't anymore? For a couple reasons. One, most of their medicines and things are back in the shop, right? They're back at their office. And two, equipment has become so sophisticated. I mean, they don't go around now with EKGs and things like that, and they didn't have those in those days. Now there's some little portable ones, because if you've ever had insurance, the girl will show up with a little EKG machine. But in those days, doctors didn't have that. It was easier now just to go to their office and get it done. And that's what happened. Technology's changed it a lot. Lenny is in Dudley, Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Lenny, good morning.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I remember early on with Flight 370, there was talk about some passengers with some stolen passports or forged passports.
Yes, and there are two people.
And right away, they dismissed any involvement with the disappearance. Now, how can they do that when they can't even find the plane?
I agree. Some people have said that they have heard stories that those two simply wanted asylum and they wanted to get out of Iran. But I still think it's a strange story.
I think they told the pilots to turn the plane around, and I think the government shot it down, and they're just covering it up. Because they don't want to say, yeah, we killed a bunch of civilians.
Shot down plane would have parts, body parts, parts of the plane all over the place, though. I mean, that disappearance is bizarre. What's even more bizarre is nobody's talking about it anymore. I think we're the only ones. We've got another text for you, and Tom has it back in the old studio.
Hey, George, did you ever deliver newspapers?
I think I helped a buddy of mine once. But I didn't have the paper route.
I got to tell you,
it's a great way to make money for a kid, though.
You are so right. I delivered papers, and they were so thick.
They sure were.
When we folded them, the rubber band would barely hold it.
You also remember when you would get ink on your fingers?
Yeah.
You would read them, you'd get ink. If you threw them, you'd get ink. But, man, those days have changed.
They have. The internet, you're absolutely right.
Yep.
We have a text from Sarah in West Palm Beach, Florida. And she says, George, a creepy thing happened to me. I saw the neighbor lady outside yesterday, but the problem is that she's been dead for 2 years. Have you ever seen someone you thought was there, but then found out they were dead?
No, I have not, but we've had many, many stories of people who have talked to people who are dead. Have you ever come across that?
No. I mean, I've seen some pretty weird stuff, but
I saw. Never. Well, let me tell you something. I saw something. And I'm going to bring this up if it's okay. I need your permission because it has to do with a personal thing with a family member of yours.
I know what you're going to say. You can.
Years ago, when you were in, we've got a setup here in Los Angeles where Tom is in his own soundproof booth where he answers the calls, puts them on hold. He can send me messages, things like that. And then I'm in the studio with our engineer and operations director, Dan Galanti. We're in there. And that we're going to be that way when the new one's finished, too. The new one is the old one being remodeled. Haven't touched it in 13 years. So, you know, we're getting brand new state-of-the-art equipment and everything else.
Very nice.
The stuff that Marconi gave me, we're not going to use anymore. But Tom was in his little soundproof room, and this was several years ago. And I could swear behind him, and I described what the boy looked like, was Tom's brother who died of cancer. How old was he when he passed?
He was 21, and I remember that night when you told me, and it's really weird to me because I've never seen him or anybody that's passed away.
And I was pretty right in that description, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were pretty close, I do have to say that.
You know, I mean, I've never seen pictures of him or anything like that. So that was a weird one, but that's probably about the closest I've come to something like that.
Could you imagine this lady that just texts? She's like looks outside and they're watering the lawn. It's the
neighbor.
There she is.
Weird. All right. Thanks. Let's go to Lexington, Kentucky. Clinton's with us now on Coast to Coast. Hello, Clinton. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. I hope you are too.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Hey, love your show. Wish it was on earlier. 5 a.m. listening to the show. Hard to work in the morning.
I know. It's tough. You can podcast, though, if you ever want to do that.
Yeah, I like it live. So, yeah, that's a good choice. I appreciate it.
Okay.
But, so when I was a kid, I was 10 years old. It was right after my father passed. My sister, myself, and I, and my cousin, we were all sitting outside on the wall at my mother's house. And she kind of lives in like a little valley, a hill on two sides, you know, limited view of the sky. I remember it just like it was yesterday. It was almost dusk. It was right at dusk, almost dark. Three giant black triangles flew over with lights on each end.
Silent.
Silent, did not make a sound. They weren't moving very fast. I mean, they almost blocked out all the completely or the sky that you could see. But yeah, completely silent, you know, it just kind of flew over. It was kind of like, what just happened? So some years, that was back in 84. So some years had gone by, like 3 years ago, I asked my sister, I was like, you know, did that really happen? You know, because, you know, just wonder if, you know, some, you know, my mind was playing with me during the
stress.
Right, sure. Or whatever. She's like, oh, yeah, it happened. So it led me to Google, you know, black UFO triangles.
Yeah.
I found out that, you know, Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, they've got tons of sightings in this area of black UFO triangles. But, I mean, these things were literally hundreds and hundreds of feet or yards across. I mean, they were so huge.
I'm losing you a little bit on your phone, by the way. If you can...
I'm sorry.
There you go.
So these things were, I mean, it was hundreds of feet or yards across. And it was just amazing.
I don't think they were ours.
Well, I would agree. I would agree with that.
I mean, I would love to see one of those objects. I was on the air back in St. Louis, and the police officers from Millstatt, Illinois, saw this huge, along with other people, huge triangular-shaped object. And people started calling into my show. And, gosh, I would have loved to have seen one of these things. I mean, I think it would be like goosebump time if you saw one of those things slowly go across as you're looking up at it. Let's go out to Canada in Ottawa. Jeff's with us. Jeff, thank you for calling, and you're up with us. How are our Canadian friends today?
Well, we're doing good. We support the Ukraine.
What a mess. You lost one Canadian in that fight, didn't you?
Well, we're not sure yet.
Okay.
There might be dual citizenship.
Ah. What's on your mind, Jeffrey?
Well, I wanted to talk about George. I was born in 62,
mm-hmm.
and I think this was about, happened about 1968 or something.
All right,
like
what happened?
That.
What happened?
Well, I was sleeping in my bed, and all of a sudden I felt like I was raised out of my bed.
Out of your body?
Yeah. And I was looking down, and I could see all my furniture that was in my room.
Could you see your body?
No, but I was raised up. I was looking down at my body.
Oh, you were? Then you did see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, what you had was the classic out-of-body experience. What I had when I was 11 years old, never to be duplicated again. I've had some strange dreams and things like that, but I haven't had that direct OBE. I've got some great books by some great coast-to-coast guests. And I've tried some of their techniques, and then sometimes I think I've gotten close, but I just haven't been able to do it. The secret is you're supposed to be meditating, or just before you go to sleep, you kind of like drift off, and then if you're able to wake up in your astral body, you are literally floating, and that's when you're supposed to do it. Those are the best times to do it. Let's go to David in Florence, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, George. Good morning, America. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a longtime listener since about 1992.
You go way back.
Yeah, I've spoken maybe 11 times on Coast to Coast.
maybe the record for a caller, maybe not, huh?
Well, I don't know, but I'm very appreciative. I've been slowly trying to get a message to America that's extremely important. Your guest last night, Mr. Sanders, had his idea of when the Republic was lost. I called in, and I got through last night, but the program ended before my turn came up. And thank God I got through tonight. Based on my past 55 years of experience as a victim of the U.S. Forest Service and Department of Interior, I discovered that this country is being shut down. This country is not in a typical recession. During my lifetime, there have been maybe four or five recessions, which usually would last maybe a year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah.
And then the country would be going good again. Not this time. And the reason is that the country is very out of balance. The part of the country that needs to be here so that the country is in balance is gone. The small miners, the medium-sized miners,
the manufacturing,
small ranchers, the small farmers, the medium-sized ranchers, the medium-sized ranch.
Yeah, it's all gone.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, they designed their highway system. They designed their interstate highway system to hurt the little places like Seligman, Arizona, Coolidge.
Why do you think they wanted to do this?
Well, I discovered back about the time I graduated from high school in 1962, I was reading a number of books on American history because I was crazy about American history. I was crazy about America then, and I'm still crazy about America. I believe that America existed even before the present government, which for the most part was just about the best thing that man ever
sure. Well, Davey, you only got a minute left, so give me the highlights, though, of what your big concern is.
Well, what I discovered is that Alexander Hamilton founded the Federalist Party. He was a royalist, a monarchist. They tried to get President Washington. They tried to get George Washington to be the first king of America.
He didn't want it. He wouldn't do it.
No, so what they did is they went ahead and they secretly established their secret monarchy in the executive branch. Now, the reason I believe this is it's not my own idea. I was reading a book by a historian by the last name of White. When he got over to Thomas Jefferson, my favorite American founder, in a footnote, he mentioned that when Jefferson became president, he wanted to completely restructure the executive branch because it was not American. He pointed out that the executive branch had been set up and structured by the Federalist Party.
Well, Lynn, I know where you're headed here, and you may not be wrong, but it's going to take one heck of a fight between us and them to try to get this back. We'll be back.